Hello and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday the 7th of October 2025. My name's Simon and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers chosen by Amanda Wood and Leslie Court, and read by Janet Proudman and Leslie Court. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Ox Talk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, Alexa, enable talking newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open talking newspaper.
Welcome to your talking newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Ox Talk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.
Oxford has been named among the top powerhouse cities and towns across the UK, alongside London, Manchester and Leeds. The study, carried out by NatWest and data company Bowhurst, analysed growth across innovation, profit, headcount and turnover among mid-market firms nationwide. Oxford ranked fourth and stood out for its research-driven businesses, many of which began as university spin-outs before scaling into significant mid-market enterprises. Manchester was placed second behind London thanks to its thriving creative and digital sectors, fuelled by Media City UK and a flourishing startup scene. Leeds came third, having built a reputation in health technology to complement its long-established financial services sector, strengthened by close ties to NHS Digital and leading hospitals. While London remains the largest centre for profit, headcount and turnover in the mid-cap market, the report reveals other areas of the UK are increasingly standing out for their innovation. Smaller authorities also made the list, with Slough and Telford and Wrekin both highlighted as growth hotspots. Swindon has also emerged as one of the nation's leading climate technology hubs, thanks to its cluster of renewable energy and clean tech firms.
Oxford's new temporary congestion charge is set to apply to motorists from Wednesday, October the 29th. Under the scheme, motorists will be charged £5 for driving through six roads in the city unless they have a permit or an exemption. The charge will be payable only once per day and allows cars to go through multiple charge locations per day or any single charge location multiple times per day. Cars, including electric cars and motorhomes, will be affected by the congestion charge. Any vehicle, not a car, is exempt, like a van, is exempt from the charge, and an automatic number plate recognition camera will check the vehicle type when you pass. There are many types of permits for residents. They can pay for a central permit, unlimited plus 50 visitor passes. Oxford residence permit area, 100 free passes for a year. and a wider Oxfordshire residence permit area, 25 free day passes. Oxfordshire households are allowed 2 permits, which can be registered to 3 cars at the home address. Oxford households are allowed 3 permits, which can be registered to 3 cars at the home address. When any car on your permit travels through a congestion charge location for the first time in a day, 1 day pass is deductive. If on the same day you travel through a congestion charge location in another car on your permit, a 2nd day pass is deducted. The County Council also offers a free central permit for workers travelling through the 6 ANPR cameras. The workplace parking permit only covers the vehicle when travelling to and from the workplace parking. All on-street parking and spaces at the Westgate, Oxpens, Worcester Street and the Oxford Rail Station, long-stay car parks, do not qualify for this. Visitors of those living in the central zone have 50 free visitor day passes a year per household. You must add your visitor's car to your permit and you must activate the pass on the day your visitor will need it. Blue Badge users can have a permit that allows unlimited travel through all 6 congestion charging locations during charging hours. The permit only covers the car when it is being used by the badge holder, in connection with the badge holder, or for transporting the badge holder or travelling to pick them up. To apply for a permit, use https://www.oxfordshire.gov.uk/transport-and-travel/oxford-temporary-congestion-charge-cars. Andrew Gant, the County Council's transport chief behind the charge, said, "I'm delighted that we have now reached this important milestone in implementing the temporary congestion charge in Oxford. Together with the significant reduction in congestion that we will see with the temporary charge, the permits will enable those who need to make trips by car to do so much more easily."
Work to build 51 genuinely affordable homes in Littlemore has reached a new milestone. Oxford City Councillors visited the Northfield Gate site off Sandy Lane West to mark the early stages of construction, with foundations being laid and drainage infrastructure now installed. The project is being delivered by Oxplace, Oxford City Council's wholly owned building company, and will provide 27 council homes and 24 shared ownership properties across 2 4-storey blocks. Councillor Linda Smith, Cabinet Member for Housing at Oxford City Council, said, "Oxford desperately needs homes and we're building them. We're tight on land and high on need, so it's exciting to see homes emerging in brownfield sites like Northfield, delivered in a way that's sustainable and community focused. Council homes are typically let at around 40% of what a private landlord would charge for the same home. Shared ownership allows buyers to purchase between 10 and 75% of a property initially and pay rent on the remainder. The Littlemore development is expected to be completed by spring 2027.
A phone ban at one of the county's biggest schools has improved culture and has been described as brilliant. King Alfred's Academy in Wantage has just under 1,800 pupils and is one of the biggest schools in the county. Rated good by Ofsted, it has had disciplinary problems in the past, with this paper reporting on fighting among Year 7 and Year 8 pupils 2 years ago. Videos shared on social media showed pupils aged between 11 and 13 involved in physical altercations on site or just outside the gates of the school. At the time, head teacher Jonathan Smart, who had just taken on the role, having been at the academy for more than 2 decades, said social media had inevitably played a significant part in the incidents. Since then, however, he said that these incidents had markedly improved. The behaviour in classrooms, said the 47-year-old, the behaviour for learning, the behaviour around the site is exceptionally strong. He said that a culture change had helped in this regard, including really clear classroom routines and a meet and greet each morning. He said, you make sure that you give your staff really good training so that they're absolutely consistent with what they do. You make sure that you tell the parents what their expectations are so they can reinforce it at home. And then you put the infrastructure in place so that the young people feel safe and they feel like they know what's expected of them. Mr. Smart added that a ban on phones during the day at school has also helped. Introduced last September, phones are locked in pouches with a magnetic pin on entry to the school. Keeping the pouch with them through the lessons, upon leaving, the pupils tap the pouch on an unlocking base and then they get their phone back. The head teacher said that they introduced this system as he felt many parents would want their children to be contactable while travelling to and from King Alfred's. This has been brilliant, he said, in terms of kids connected with one another and having to talk to each other. It has definitely helped us to improve the culture without question, because smartphones are brilliant, but they're addictive and they can be misused. Another measure that Mr. Smart was keen to highlight was an improved timetable created by their new deputy headteacher. This has not only reduced staff travel between the two sites on Challey Road and Portway, but also that they've been able to deliver tutor time for the first time since the pandemic. These measures seem to have borne fruit, with what the teacher described as impressive set of results for King Alfred's sixth form students. Released in August, nearly 30% of the grades at A-levels were A-star or A, with over 50% of BTEC grades with a distinction star or a distinction.
The leader of Oxford City Council has written to the government to say the decision on Oxford United's new stadium is increasingly urgent, after it gave itself extra time to decide. The 16,000-seater stadium at the Triangle site near Kidlington Roundabout was granted planning permission by Charwell District Council in August. Due to the scale of the proposal, it was referred to the Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government for final sign-off, but the Secretary of State was given extra time to decide whether or not to call it in on September the 11th. It's not clear how long it will take to make a final decision. The club is currently based at the Kassam Stadium, but its lease will run out in June 2028. Council leader Susan Brown wrote to Secretary of State Steve Reid, MP, on September the 30th, urging for a quick decision. In the letter, Councillor Brown acknowledged that Labour MPs Annalise Dodds and Sean Woodcock had already written to him in early September, but that the issue had become increasingly urgent since then. She said Oxford United's tenure at its current stadium is rapidly running out. The landowner, who wants to redevelop the site, has said the club must move out by the end of the 2027-8 season at the latest. As a result, work on the new stadium needs to start urgently. The new stadium, which aims to be the UK's first zero-carbon football stadium for a major club, would bring a host of economic and social benefits to the area, including new jobs, improved transport connections, increased support for grassroots sport, and enabling the men's and women's teams to play in the same stadium. The site is also in an accessible and sustainable location near Oxford Parkway Railway Station and Oxford Ring Road. The new stadium will secure the future of Oxford United Football Club. I know, as a football fan yourself, you will understand how much that will mean to so many people across Oxford and Oxfordshire. Friends of Stratfield Brake, who oppose the plans for the new stadium, have written to Mr. Reid asking for it to be called in and questioning why the City Council has not used compulsory purchase powers to buy the Kassam site. The Department of Housing, Communities and Local Government said the pause should not be read as an indication of how the Secretary of State views the application. Oxford United Football Club previously released a statement confirming that the plans were still under consideration by the government and that the club remains committed to delivering a world-class stadium that benefits both the club and the wider community. As part of plans, the club also wants to build a 180-bed hotel, conference and events centre, gym, health and well-being and community spaces.
A post office has announced it is to close after 24 years' trade with great sadness. Postmasters have announced that the branch in Chalgrove, southeast of Oxford and Abingdon, will have its last trading day at the end of January. Rising costs, combined with a lack of relative increased funding from the central post office, have been blamed for the high street business's impending demise. First-class hair, the hair salon next to the post office, will not be affected by the closure. It is with great sadness that we announce the closure of Chalgrove post office, the post office said in a statement. After struggling with rising costs for many years and post office funding that has not increased with inflation, we regret to confirm that our last trading day will be January the 30th, 2026. We would like to sincerely thank everyone who has supported us over the past 24 years. A very special thanks goes to our treasured colleagues Jill and Sarah, whose dedication and care have meant so much to our community. We are especially proud to celebrate Jill's 40 years of service with the post office, all of which have been here in Chalgrove. Her loyalty and commitment have been truly remarkable. We would also like to recognise the extraordinary efforts of our team during the COVID pandemic, when they went above and beyond expectations, risking their own health to ensure the post office remained open and the community was supported through such difficult times. Thank you once again to all our loyal customers and colleagues, past and present, for their support throughout the years. Chalgrove residents reacted with shock and sadness, highlighting the great job of the workers at the post office. One man said, "It is so sad, a big blow to the village," and added, "Jill and Sarah have done a great job against the odds for so long and will be sorely missed." Another added, "Totally gutted and so sad for you all and the village. You have provided such amazing service to the village. My heart goes out to Jill and Sarah." So from February, residents will face having to drive to other villages if they want to use a post office. 4 miles to Watlington, 5 miles to Warborough, or 7 miles away in Berinsfield. The post office network includes around 11,500 branches across the UK, 115 of which are Crown post offices located in city centres and staffed by post office employees.
Oxford University's new Arts and Humanities Centre has opened its doors to the public and aims to boost tourism and bridge the gap between town and gown. The Stephen A. Schwarzman Centre in the Radcliffe Observatory Quarter will officially open on October the 13th, when term starts, but both students and the public are already having a look around and using its facilities. For the first time in the university's history, all its humanities departments will be connected under one roof, including the new Institute for Ethics in AI. The building itself also has a number of new spaces which will be open for both public and university events, including a 500-seater Soman Concert Hall, a 250-seat theatre, a black box space for immersive performances, a dance studio, cinema and exhibition space. As you enter the building from the Woodstock roadside, there is a large great hall with seating space where students, staff and visitors can gather, as well as cafe and bar area. A programme of events will begin in April 2026, including a 360-degree immersive audio experience with Icelandic post-rock band Sigur Rós, performances from American street dance star Lil Buck, and a series of conversations about AI, creativity and music chaired by journalist and broadcaster Samira Ahmed. Professor Dan Grimley, head of humanities at Oxford University, said he hoped the centre could help make the city an even more vibrant and richer tourism destination. He said, "Don't just come for the day and wander around our pretty buildings. Come and see an exhibition. Come and see a concert. Come and have those life-changing experiences. Spend the night here if you're not from Oxfordshire and really immerse yourself in that cultural offer. Then I think people will have a much more rewarding experience being here, and that's absolutely what makes Oxford a global city." Professor Grimley also stressed that the centre could help make arts and humanities, as well as the university itself, more accessible to the public. He added, "I went to a state comprehensive school and I feel really passionately about access to arts, culture, languages and history. I worry that there's been so much pressure on those subjects in the school curriculum that the version of me going through school now might not have that same opportunity, and that feels wrong to me. If there's a way in which we can use this space to accelerate that access, I think that would be a really important part of our mission as a university." The building is open to the public from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. every day without the need to sign in or make a booking. The City of Oxford Silver Band made a triumphant return to the competitive brass band scene last month with a performance at the National Championships of Great Britain. Making their first appearance at the national level in 13 years, the band placed in the prestigious competition in Cheltenham. Under the leadership of musical director Douglas Brown, the band has gone through a period of rebuilding and rejuvenation. This has paid off with a number of impressive performances at regional contests, including a second place finish at this year's London and South East England event.
The Ministry of Defence has exploded a shell from the First World War in an Oxford river. Thames Valley Police attended and placed a cordon around Donington Bridge at about 12:40 on Sunday, September the 28th. The shell, which is believed to date back to the First World War, was discovered in the nearby Long Bridges Nature Park. The Ministry of Defence's explosive ordnance officers attended the scene and carried out a controlled explosion later on in the afternoon, about 4:25. Commenting later, a spokesperson for Thames Valley Police said, "Explosive officers for the MOD attended and conducted a controlled explosion. A small cordon was in place at the location while it was disposed of safely, but no evacuations were necessary."
A sixth form student has seen his research into loneliness published by a respected think tank. Rupert from Magdalen College School in Oxford wrote a blog for the Higher Education Policy Institute calling on universities to consider how they support students in tackling loneliness. He highlighted the physical and emotional effects of loneliness, including hypertension, reduced immune efficiency, and changes in the neurological pathways related to facial recognition. Rupert said, "Loneliness is clearly becoming an endemic problem, particularly in secondary and higher education, and is having a very real effect on students' health. Loneliness is a self-perpetuating condition and something that easily becomes chronic, so it's therefore best to prevent it before it begins. The policy focus must be placed on making students aware of loneliness before it can start to impact on people's education and well-being." His research began as part of his Wainfleet Studies project, a long-form piece of research unique to Magdalen College School and often supervised by an external tutor from the University of Oxford. Nick Hillman, Director of Higher Education Policy Institute, said, "We are delighted to publish Rupert's brilliant piece. There is a loneliness epidemic among undergraduates, and Rupert's work shows why it's so important that we all work hard to tackle the problem. We don't often open up the Higher Education Policy Institute blog to people who are still at school, but I wanted to do so on this occasion because Rupert's piece is so good and the issues are so important." Cotswold Wildlife Park has celebrated a record-breaking year for both visitor numbers and breeding successes. The park has welcomed several new arrivals, including four greater bamboo lemur babies, a species that is critically endangered. The park is the only zoological collection in the UK and one of just three worldwide to have bred these primates in 2025. With this year's additions, the park is now home to 13 greater bamboo lemurs, the largest breeding group in the world. Natalie Horner, section head of primates, small mammals and birds, said, "We are incredibly proud that both our groups have produced young this year, meaning we have four baby bamboo lemurs who are all going from strength to strength every day. They've all had their first taste of solid food and are becoming more confident, spending some time away from their mothers, playing and exploring their enclosures. The as yet unsexed and unnamed new arrivals have made their debut ahead of World Lemur Day on October the 31st. The park's successes extend beyond the lemurs. The great grey owls surprised keepers by producing their first brood. Introduced to each other in 2021, this year the pair successfully produced four chicks, all of which have fledged. Dom and Lucy, bird keepers at the park, said, "Over the last 3 years, they have attempted to nest, but to no avail. This year, after some tweaking of their nest material, our patience was finally rewarded when two little faces poked up out of the nest box. Four Humboldt penguin chicks were also welcomed this year, marking the most successful breeding session in a decade. One chick, named Pippin, formed a special bond with birdkeeper Laura. Pippin was abandoned by her parents at 4 weeks old and was taken care of by Laura and other penguin keepers. After nearly 2 months of hand-rearing, Pippin was slowly introduced to the colony under the watchful eye of the keepers. Laura said, "Pippin is thriving and loves playing with the other youngsters in the water. She still follows me whenever I'm in the enclosure, especially when I'm cleaning the pool. She won't leave my side. She's grown into such a confident young penguin, and we're very proud of Pippin." The park's yellow mongoose pair, Chip and Nutmeg, have also had their most successful breeding season since joining the park. The pair have produced four pups this year.
A 103-year-old World War II veteran has fulfilled her dream of feeding penguins. Beryl Kitchen served in the Royal Corps of Signals during the conflict and has always dreamed of feeding penguins. To mark her upcoming 104th birthday in October, her family got in touch with the Cotswold Wildlife Park in Burford to arrange something special. The team welcomed Ms. Kitchen earlier in the summer and fulfilled her dream of meeting and feeding the penguins at the park. She was an instant hit with everyone she met, from the penguins to the keepers and visitors alike. One penguin in particular, 27-year-old Puff, the oldest of the colony, stayed by her side for the entire time. Miss Kitchen was a natural with the animals, and as well as feeding the penguins, keeper Laura had another surprise up her sleeve for her. She bestowed her with a rare honour and told the centenarian that one of the park's new penguin chicks is going to be named after her. Miss Kitchen was over the moon and promised to come back and meet her namesake once the chick had left the next box. Nest box. Recently, 2 weeks ago, Miss Kitchen and her family returned to the park, much to the delight of the keepers and the penguins. Not only did she meet her new namesake, but the veteran was also gifted a penguin adoption of Beryl the penguin chick from the park. Puff also waddled up to see his friend, and the other penguins formed an orderly queue to welcome her. The news initially featured in some national publications, and when her family saw the article, Miss Kitchen's Andrew said, "I've just been over to see my mum. I've never seen her laugh so much when she saw the paper. especially when she said her spread was larger than the King's. Thanks again for all your kindness and support before and on the day. Let us know when Beryl emerges from his or her burrow, and hopefully we can all pop and see him or her. A spokesman for the Cotswolds Wildlife Park said, "We look forward to many more visits from Beryl and her family. They've just become season ticket holders and plan to come back and see Beryl the penguin chick whenever Beryl wishes. Thanks to keepers Laura and Chris for making Beryl's visit one to remember. And most of all, thank you for your service, Beryl."
A team of six have swum across the English Channel to raise more than £40,000 for the John Radcliffe Hospital. The Oxford Orcas completed the 21-mile relay swim in 17 hours and 4 minutes, finishing at Cap Blanc-Nez in France at 7:18 p.m. They were raising money through a Just Giving page for Oxford Hospital's charity in support of the John Radcliffe's Paediatric Critical Care Unit. Dr. Michael Carter, a consultant on the unit, said, "Originally the team had a slot to swim in mid-July, but we were weathered out, with lightning and high winds meaning it wasn't safe to take on the challenge. Since then, we've been on standby, continuing all our training and with bags packed, poised to take up the next available slot to swim the channel." The team set off from Samfire Ho near Dover at 1:14 a.m. on Saturday, September the 27th. Professor Andrew Brent said, "It was an honour to be the first swimmer, setting off with the white cliffs of Dover behind me. We've all been training for a long time, and swimming under a clear night sky with the lights of the boat as my beacon was sublime." Rosie Priddy, lead education nurse in paediatric critical care, added, "The first few hours were a bit choppy, meaning we had to work extra hard to power through, especially those like me battling seasickness. But as we approached France, the waters calmed and conditions were perfect. As a nurse on the ward, it was a privilege to do something so positive to help the families we care for. The team rotated every hour and swam without wetsuits in water temperatures around 16 degrees C. George Middleton, a friend of the clinical team, said, "I'm usually used to much warmer water, so swimming wearing just Speedos in 16 degrees was a bit of a shock. After each swim, we wrapped up in multiple layers with hot water bottles to get back to normal, but I wouldn't have missed this for anything." Hazel Shaw, who swam the final leg, added, "The final moments of our 17-hour relay swim couldn't have been more beautiful. The sea had completely calmed and the sun was setting. It's an experience I'll never forget." The challenge has so far raised more than £40,000, which will fund specialist support and training for the paediatric unit. Sarah Vaccari, who is part of Oxfordshire Hospital's charity, said, "I feel so lucky to have been part of this amazing team. To swim in the middle of the channel, watching the sunrise, is something I'll never forget."
Four puppies have been given their first taste of riding on a bus as they continue their journey to becoming qualified guide dogs. The young canines were welcomed to Oxford Bus Company's Cowley Depot and embarked on a custom route through the city centre on one of City Sightseeing Oxford's open-top tour buses. Six-month-old and 13-month-old Labradors Peaches and Gwen were joined by 5-month-old Shepherd Cross Leo and 7-month-old Labrador Cross Ushka. Their journey started at the depot and saw them travel down Cowley Road with a stop at the Mansell Way Garden. The trip continued along the High Street to St Aldate's and then onto Abingdon Road, where they took a second break at Hinksey Park. As they travelled through the city, the puppies drew some curious glances from onlookers. The bus ride provided the puppies with a unique socialisation experience, allowing them to grow accustomed to the movement and sounds of public transport without members of the public on board. Mandy Jones, puppy development advisor at Guide Dogs, said, "In their life as a guide dog, the dogs will be exposed to all kinds of new situations and ways of transport. ensuring that our puppies can gain some of these experiences early on in life in a safe, controlled manner helps us to give them the best possible start. If they are able to explore new things out of the hustle and bustle of daily life, they can begin to gain the confidence that will ultimately help them succeed with their future guide dog owner. Oxford Bus Company has been partnering with Guide Dogs to offer free travel on its services for the charity's volunteer puppy raisers to familiarise the trainee assistance dogs with public transport. Luke Marlin, Managing Director of the Oxford Bus Company, said it was really enjoyable to welcome back guide dogs for a trip across the city. By becoming familiar with bus journeys, the puppies will be able to later assist those who are registered either blind or partially sighted to confidently travel to work, shops and visit family and friends. Helping to deliver that sense of independence is such a brilliant part of our ongoing relationship with guide dogs. Our team enjoys watching each puppy progress in its training and then in seeing those same dogs become regular users of our services with their new owners. Now, Guide Dogs is looking for more puppy raiser volunteers in Oxfordshire.
A literary festival will deliver a day of storytelling and workshops this month. Wolf Lit Fest, taking place in Wolvercourt, is the second one-day literary event organised by Oxford Independent Authors, following the success of Head Lit Fest earlier this year. The festival will be held on Saturday, October the 18th, from 10 till 4 at Wolvercourt Village Hall. The event will feature a book fair, a programme of talks and workshops, all of which will be free to attend. The festival is partnering with Assisted Reading for Children, that's ARCH, an Oxfordshire charity that supports children's reading, confidence and well-being through 30-minute one-to-one reading sessions with trained volunteers. The charity currently works in more than 100 schools in Oxfordshire, supporting 750 children a week. Emma Orton, ARCH recruitment officer, said, "ARCH is delighted to be involved in Wolverlit Fest and for the opportunity to connect with the brilliant local independent authors within Oxfordshire. At ARCH, we know how powerful stories can be in sparking imagination, nurturing curiosity and building confidence in young readers. And we know that Wolverlit Fest will be a brilliant event full of inspiration for young and older readers alike. We hope to bring families together to discover a love of reading. As well as promoting its activities and services through a stall at Wolf Lit Fest, ARCH will be running a workshop celebrating the magic of shared reading. Suitable for all ages and reading levels, the session will bring stories to life with puppets and games. Maggie Lloyd, an ARCH volunteer, said, "I've been working one-to-one with reluctant readers for more than 10 years, and I know from experience just how magical shared reading can be, taking all the stress and strain out of reading aloud and turning it into fun." The workshop is part of a full programme of talks and sessions for both children and adults that will include the launch of 4 new books. Oxford illustrator Mario Curlow will lead an hour-long drawing and painting workshop for children. For adults, sessions will cover topics including research in historical fiction, world building, the crime writers panel, Murder They Wrote, and What Makes a Good Story. The book fair will feature independent authors, small publishers, author groups and illustrators, with titles spanning historical fiction, crime, children's, comedy, thrillers, fantasy, science fiction and poetry. Entry to the book fair and all workshops is free of charge.
A rare species of bumblebee has been spotted on a solar farm site. The sighting of the brown-banded carder bee came during a training and observation workshop led by Andy Benson of the Bumblebee Conservation Trust, a national organisation that supports scientific research and raises public awareness. It was spotted on the South Hill solar farm site just outside Charlbury. the Bumblebee Conservation Trust, runs a national citizen science programme of bee walks to gather data on which bumblebee species are found where and in what abundance. According to the charity Sustainable Childbury, a brown-banded carder bee resembles the much more frequently seen common carder bee found in gardens across the country. In both species, they have a splodge of orangey-red hair on their backs, but the unique distinguishing feature of the brown-banded carder bee is that it has black hairs under its wings. There are 24 species of bumblebee in Britain, and only 8 of them are common. Seeing any of the others is unusual, to the extent that Mr. Benson felt he should check with experts in his office before positively identifying the bee we had seen as being a brown-banded carder. The charity said there was great excitement when confirmation came through 7 days later. A band of volunteers has been conducting monthly bee walks at South Hill Solar during the spring and summer. Data is gathered by walking 3 set routes across the 19-hectare site, known as transects, each about a kilometre long. The walkers move at a regular pace, counting and identifying only bumblebees seen within the width and height of 2 metres and 4 metres in front of them. The rules are there to ensure that information is collected in a consistent way to provide scientifically meaningful results from bee walks throughout the country. Mr. Benson ran an initial training workshop back in March to get things moving past, just as the bee flying season was getting underway, with the first queen bees appearing to look for suitable places to nest. The September workshop was held to consolidate skills developed over the summer and motivate new people to get involved next year. Mr. Benson will be back next spring to lead another workshop with a focus on getting more youngsters interested in bumblebee conservation. The South Hill Community Energy, which runs a solar farm, is supporting the bee walking programme as part of efforts to monitor and increase biodiversity on the site.
Air taxis between Oxford and Cambridge have moved a step closer to reality with the launch of a new project. Skyports Infrastructure, the leader in vertiport infrastructure for the advanced air mobility industry, in partnership with an all-British consortium of leading aviation companies, has launched the OxCam AAM Corridor Demonstrator. The demonstrator looks to test and exhibit the commercial and operational viability of electric air taxi operations between Oxford and Cambridge. Commencing from October the 1st and bringing together the expertise of Sky Sports, Bristow Helicopters, NATS, Vertical Aerospace and Oxfordshire County Council, the 6-month project aims to accelerate the transition of advanced air mobility from trials to commercially viable regional operations within the UK. This consortium includes detailed operational planning, regulatory readiness, community engagement strategies and infrastructure integration within the important Oxford to Cambridge corridor. In providing a robust business case and concept of operations for the commercialisation of regional electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft, EVTOL, but I'll spell that out next time it appears, the project aims to directly support the government's ambition to kickstart the economy, contributing to the Chancellor's vision for the Oxfordshire-Cambridge corridor to add substantial value to the UK economy by 2035. In addition to demonstrating the Oxford to Cambridge route, a significant highlight of the project will be a planned A-to-A piloted electric vertical takeoff and landing demonstration flight of Vertical Aerospace's VX4 prototype, which will take place next year from Skyport's Bicester Vertiport. The first time a piloted passenger EVTOL will fly in the UK from a vertiport. The data from this live flight demonstration will directly feed into and support the OxCam desktop exercises, simulations and demonstrations. The project has been supported by a successful bid and subsidy from UKRI's Future Flight Regional Demonstrator 2, which has the overall objective of accelerating the transition from trials of cutting-edge innovations such as electric vertical takeoff and landing, to real-world commercial operations at a regional scale. In turn, the project's aim is to serve as a foundational step towards unlocking increased productivity, job creation, and private investment in the UK's advanced air mobility sector, enhancing regional connectivity and contributing significantly to the nation's net zero targets and levelling up agenda. Duncan Walker, CEO of Skyports, said, "This project is truly innovative in its pragmatic end-to-end approach, demonstrating how AAM can deliver significant economic, social and environmental benefits to UK communities, ultimately boosting the national economy and cementing Britain's global leadership in future flight. It's a privilege to bring together and lead this consortium of top UK aviation companies, which will have a direct impact on the local economy."
A spooky time awaits as the Oxford Ghost Tour returns for a fifth year this Halloween. This interactive walking tour will deliver spine-tingling tales across three evenings in late October and early November. Participants will explore Oxford's grisly past on a stroll through some of its most historic areas. The 75-minute experience, operated by City Sightseeing Oxford, will be brought to life by a professional actor in an authentic cavalier outfit. The guide will reveal the real meaning behind Dead Man's Walk, the strange monk haunting Wadham College, and the shocking discovery in Exeter College's coal cellar. The tour will visit famous spots in the city centre, as well as narrow streets. Clarissa Garcia, retail and tourism manager at City Sightseeing Oxford, explained what people can expect from the tour. She said, "We can't wait to welcome back locals and tourists alike to our popular ghost tours. You may think you know Oxford well enough, but our tours will open your eyes to some of the murkier corners of the city. Our tour guide will share terrifying stories of hauntings and executions, and you might even hear about some ghosts too. Although the tour will inject some horror into Halloween, it is family friendly and suitable for children in search of some frightening fun. Three tours will be in operation this year, with space available on a first-come, first-served basis, so book now to avoid disappointment." Luke Marion, Managing Director of Oxford Bus Company, which owns City Sightseeing Oxford, added, "The Oxford Ghost Tour continues to go from strength to strength, leaving people entertained and spooked in equal measure. It's a privilege to operate in a city so rich in history, across its cobbled streets and archaic buildings. Halloween offers the perfect opportunity to learn more about Oxford's grisly past and experience a different side to the city we think we all know so well." This year's tours are scheduled for October the 31st, November the 1st and November the 2nd, all starting at 5:30 p.m., from City Sightseeing's Visitor Information Point on High Street and concluding on Broad Street. Prices have remained the same as last year, with adult tickets costing £19, seniors and students available for £17, children's tickets priced at £13, and family tickets costing £47.50. Children must be accompanied by an adult at all times.
A group of Thames Water investors have offered a sweetened rescue deal for the struggling supplier, vowing to invest an extra £1 billion and write off more than a quarter of debts in return for more lenient performance targets. London and Valley Water, a consortium of the supplier's main creditors, including investors and financial institutions, said it would write off around £4 billion, or 25% of the debt it holds, up from 20% in the previous proposal, plus debts held by other creditors. Including an extra £150 million of new equity, the lenders said they are pumping in a further £1 billion of investment on top of the proposal submitted to regulator Ofwat in May. The new bid is more ambitious, delivers greater value for customers, and follows 3 months of discussion with and feedback from Ofwat to help turn around Thames Water and stave off the need for temporary nationalisation, according to the group. Thames Water, Britain's biggest water supplier, with 16 million customers and 8,000 employees, is on the brink of collapse as it struggles under a near £20 billion debt mountain. The creditors are looking to secure backing for their plans to avoid the company being put into a temporary special administration regime, SAR, which would effectively wipe out their investments. They said the additional investment would ensure long-term financial resilience and also cover existing fines Thames Water must pay for regulatory and pollution failures, it added. London and Valley Water outlined plans to eventually float Thames Water on the stock market, but vowed not to sell the company before March 31, 2030, to ensure a focus on the turnaround. However, the proposal comes with an effective ultimatum to Ofwat for it to accept renegotiated targets on pollution incidents and water leaks in return for the investment. The group is also pressing for a swift decision, cautioning delays would increase the challenges of delivering the company's turnaround. Ofwat is now reviewing the latest proposal alongside other regulators. The creditors are the bondholders who now effectively own Thames Water after the High Court approved a financial restructuring earlier this year through a loan of up to £3 billion to ensure it can keep running until the summer of 2026. Phew. The firms involved, including UK and US investment companies such as Elliott Management, Aberdeen Investments and American private capital firm Apollo Global Management, submitted their improved bid plans to regulator Ofwat on the 1st of October. Infrastructure expert Mike McTighe has been named as the proposed new chairman of Thames Water, should the bid be accepted, replacing incumbent Sir Adrian Montague, with five non-executive directors earmarked to join the board. It is thought the refreshed board would make a decision on whether to retain the executive team, including Chief Executive Chris Weston.
A group of budding young chefs from Oxfordshire have made culinary history by creating the world's first sushi recipe book designed exclusively by children. The children, aged 6 to 11, spent a day at Jess's Orchard in Ensham, creating sushi characters with names like Seaweed Sid and Unicone, each with their own personality, activities and recipe instructions. Their designs have been turned into a new recipe book, Seaweed Sid and the Sushi Squad, commissioned by Japanese food brand Yutaka to show how fun and accessible sushi making can be for children. English singer Alexandra Burke, Oxfordshire-based Jesse Wheely and Japanese chef Yuki Gomi supported the children in turning their ideas into simple, family-friendly sushi recipes. Ms. Burke said, "Being a parent of two, I'm always looking for ways to maintain wonderfully nutritious meals while keeping the kitchen time lots of fun. I love Japanese food, so it is a dream to work on this sushi book with all that the talented young foodie artists and Yukata can do." The project is part of a wider effort to encourage adventurous eating among families. New research from Yutaka shows a shift in the types of meals children are learning to cook at home. A survey of 2,000 parents found 89% are moving away from traditional treats like flapjacks in favour of healthier, more adventurous options such as sushi and fresh pasta. While sausage rolls, Rice Krispie cakes and flapjacks are falling out of favour, more families are making fresh pasta, ramen and sushi. Apparently, health concerns are also influencing choices, with 27% of parents avoiding cakes and biscuits due to their high sugar content. Lisa Harris, food trends expert at Harris & Hayes, said, "What really stands out in Utaka's research is how home cooking has transformed into a lifestyle choice, as well as being a practical necessity. It indicates a genuine generational shift towards making the kitchen a space for bonding, creativity and healthier choices." Ken Furukawa, CEO of Tazaki Foods, the parent company of Utaka, added, "Kids' cooking skills may be changing, but the heart of these family foodie moments remains the same, connection and joy. As sushi becomes increasingly popular among families, we want to remove the mystery and show that it's not only healthy and delicious, but it is surprisingly simple to make at home. By putting the power in children's hands, we're championing a future where sushi becomes a firm staple in British family kitchens. That's why we've created the world's first sushi recipe book, designed by kids."
Illegal e-scooters have been seized by police in an operation in Oxford as part of an ongoing crackdown on their use in the city. Thames Valley Police's East Oxford and Cowley neighbourhood policing team were out on bike patrols looking out for illegal use of privately owned e-scooters on 30th of September. The force spotted two illegal e-scooters being ridden around Cowley Road and in the grounds of St Mary and St John's Church. The riders were stopped and the illegal scooters were seized by police. It comes as the latest crackdown after a string of confiscations of the popular privately owned e-scooters in the city, which are illegal to use on public roads, pavements, cycle lanes and other public spaces.
Comedian Jenny Eclair and interior designer Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen have taken part in a live painting challenge at Blenheim Palace. The event took place in the Woodstock Palace's recently opened rooftop view platform, where the pair spent the day capturing the panoramic views in their own artistic styles. Mrs. Eclair was joined by her husband Jeff, while classically trained fine artist Mr. Llewellyn Bowen painted alongside his wife Jackie. Jenny Eclair said, "My partner Jeff and I had such a great time up on the roof of Blenheim Palace. What a place! What a privilege! What a view! Sadly, my skills fell far short of doing the place justice, but we had a hoot with Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen and his glorious wife Jackie, with the bonus of a delicious lunch in the orangery." Throughout the event, visitors were able to observe the painting process in real time. Mr. Llewellyn Bowen said, "Getting a gargoyle's eye view from the rooftops of Blenheim was a privilege enjoyed by so few. Just me, Jenny Eclair, our spouses, and a handful of historical dukes. What a fabulous fillip to the creative juices. Jackie and I loved our time up top and now feel so highly honoured by our own artistic endeavours. They are hanging outside amongst the Blenheim Palace's sumptuous ducal wallpaper." The completed paintings will be displayed in the salon at Blenheim Palace for a limited time. The challenge also aimed to shine a spotlight on the palace's ongoing £12 million roof restoration project that is preserving the historic building for generations to come. Ms. Eclair said, "We'd like to thank Blenheim for inviting us and wish the extensive roof restorations all the luck in the world. Blenheim is a precious place and everything that can be done to preserve it needs as much support as possible." Opened earlier this year, the rooftop view is a limited experience as a result of the restoration project. It operates daily from 10:30 to 4:30 and is included as part of the Palace, Park and Gardens Pass at no additional cost. Viewers are able to explore at their own pace with a recommended dwell time of around 30 minutes to allow for the climb, the view and coming down again. The rooftop view experience offers visitors a unique opportunity to explore the palace from above and to enjoy views of the Oxfordshire countryside.
Some 17 speed cameras across Oxfordshire appear to have caught no one speeding since 2019. Thames Valley Police published data from speeding offences by its fixed cameras on its own website on an interactive map. But 17 cameras, including in Oxford, Abingdon, Didcot, Whitney and Bicester, have zero under offences registered. Zero offences were recorded at speed cameras in Marston Ferry Road in Oxford, West Way or Cumnor Hill in Botley and Oxford Road in Kidlington. In Abingdon, zero offences were recorded since 2019 in Audlett Drive, where the speed limit has gone down from 40 to 30, and Wootton Road, which is now a 20-mile-an-hour road. Elsewhere, zero offences were recorded in London Road in Wheatley, Foxhill Road in Didcot, Woodstock Road in Whitney, and Buckingham Road and Churchill Road in Bicester. The speed camera along the A40 at Swinbrook and Widford has also not flashed a single time since 2019, as well as many others in the county. We asked Thames Valley Police whether it was a fault in the data, or there really had been no instances of people speeding at these locations. A spokeswoman for the force said, "Thames Valley Police operates a number of fixed safety cameras across our three counties, not all of which are operational all of the time. However, they could be operational at any time. The data we use to decide which cameras are operational at which times is constantly reviewed, and we adjust our approach based on the data and intelligence available to us. Essentially, the data is correct," the force said. Thames Valley Police insist all of the cameras have the technology installed in them, but the data is just a case of when they are operational. Speed cameras in Oxfordshire include approximately 70 fixed camera sites, plus several junctions with red light cameras. These speed cameras significantly contrast the ones in Botley Road, which this newspaper exclusively revealed flash on average 9 times a day. The highest speed recorded in Botley Road was by a Volvo on July the 10th last year at 86 miles an hour, almost 3 times the 30 mile an hour speed limit. But also 9,000 plus drivers have been caught at 35 miles an hour and subsequently sent a letter since June 2017.
An Only Fools and Horses mega fan from Oxford has splashed out £22,000 on Del Boy's tacky cocktail bar, 44 times the expected selling price. The freestanding wraparound bar, decorated with cream-coloured padded vinyl on the outside, was a regular fixture in the Trotter's flat. Fans of the comedy show will remember the bar for being where Dale kept his ready supply of cigars. The pineapple ice bucket also took pride of place on the booze cabinet, which was featured in most scenes throughout the long-running series. The bar, measuring 42 inches high and 41.7 inches wide, was produced by Italian furniture maker Mascagni Mobili. It was expected to fetch between £500 and £600 at auction, but it smashed its estimate when it triggered a 200-people bidding war. The final winning bid was £22,720, 44 times more than the expected selling price, when it went under the hammer at Fielding's Auctioneers in Stourbridge, West Midlands, on Thursday, September the 25th. Director Will Farmer said, "For me, of course, we're thrilled. The vendor is thrilled, the buyer is thrilled, and he's already paid for it and collecting it later in the week." He's dropping the kids off tomorrow and driving up from Oxford. He's absolutely off the scale delighted. He's a brilliant guy, the new owner. They're absolutely thrilled. He saw it via the media and in his own words he said, "I'm having that." When it did reach £10,000, we were shocked. It kept going, and it only takes two people to dig their heels in. It's an incredible result. The vendor can't actually believe it. He's as shocked as anything. Will admitted he felt a bit of a plonker for giving the bar such a measly valuation. He said it's one of the highest prices. It's the second highest for a piece of only fools and horses memorabilia. I'm going to be living down the £500 to £600 estimate for a few years to come. It is fair to say I feel a bit of a plonker about that. It was a closed online-only sale. The whole thing was fought out on the internet. It was a fully contested sale online. Rachel Holland, music and entertainment specialist for Fielding, said, "This is a rare and fascinating piece of 20th century popular culture. By repute, the bar was only used on the set of Only Fools and Horses. It was acquired by the current vendor's father, himself a known actor and producer, on the 19th of January 1992.
Drivers visiting a shopping area in Oxford twice in a day are getting caught on camera and fined. The incidents are happening at parking spaces controlled by the Smart Parking Company outside Elms Parade Shops in Botley, close to the Westway shopping centre. Some drivers parking in spaces in front of shops in Elms Parade, who visit the area twice in a day, are receiving penalty charge notices, even though they are not staying beyond the 2 hours free parking limit. Elms Parade is long established and features a Morrison's supermarket and other local shops. Behind it is the newer Westway precinct, which has a co-op and a number of restaurants. Oxford West and Abingdon MP Leila Moran said residents have told her they have experienced issues with the parking controls. She added, "We've been in touch with Mace Group, the Westway developers, to understand what steps are being taken to resolve issues there. Residents are concerned that tickets are being issued by the parking operator unfairly. For example, there are cases of drivers being issued tickets who have visited the shops twice in one day. There are additional concerns that drivers who are parking illegally on double yellow lines are not being ticketed and fined." The MP added, "More widely, parking operators and their practices are an issue across the constituency. Parking management is a wild west with a lack of regulation, and we will continue to push to ensure fair and consistent practices are adopted for all. As well as parking at Elms Parade, there is additional parking for shoppers at Westway. Oxfordshire County Council has launched an informal consultation on parking restrictions in Botley and at Westminster Way. The consultation says, we are writing to residents to gather feedback on potential parking measures in the area, which are being considered in response to the development on land at Botley Centre Westway. Under the planning decision, funding was secured under a Section 106 agreement for the consultation and promotion of parking controls within the vicinity to mitigate the potential impacts of overspill on the surrounding streets. Officers at the County Council have worked with the local County Councillor to bring forward an informal consultation about parking issues in the area, with the aim to develop options for changes that will help address local concerns and make the roads safer and more accessible for all road users. Judy Roberts, County Councillor for North Hinksey, said Hazel Road and Seacourt Road could be considered for controlled parking, and residents are now being asked for their views. She added, drivers are being ticketed for visiting Elms Parade parking spaces twice in a day. It's happening quite a lot.
And that was the last item for this week. Please note, there is now a new telephone number for you to ring if you have any comments about this week's Ox Talk edition. Please ring 07 496 062 280, and leave your name and contact details, as well as your message. Alternatively, you can email mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and previous editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download. Thank you very much for listening.